Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a great week. So this week on the podcast, a little different one. We've kind of switched the tables and I'm actually being interviewed. I did this interview for Grey Area with the journalist Alex Amaro. Grey Area is a company that is run by Michael Julian, who also runs Festival Insider, books for Electric Zoo, Elro, and a few other events in America. I sat down and had a conversation with Alex and I just really enjoyed the conversation we had. So I hit them up and was like, would you mind if I put it on the podcast? Because I think it would be an interesting listen for everyone. Talks a lot about my history and kind of how it all started for me and my views on the scene. And yeah, it was just a really nice conversation. So without further ado, it's Alex Amaro interviewing myself. Enjoy. I'm really looking forward to coming back, to be fair. It's been, well, a year and a few months since I played. Yeah. My first show back in, like, generally is a show in London in August. And it's with Denson Beaker and somebody called Night Wave, I believe. So that's gonna be like the first show back. I kind of hope like nobody turns up just so I can learn how to DJ again.
Right.
But I don't think that would be the case with Denson Beaker on the lineup. But I'm really looking forward to coming back. And I know we've got a few things potentially planning in earlier than that in America that might happen. That you might be a bit privy to as well, but yeah, I think everything's still up in the air. We still don't fully know, but I think we're just in the point where we just have to keep soldiering on and just hope that we can kind of open clubs again and get back at it.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it too. It's been a weird time, and it's, you know, I mean, in America it's a little bit odd because there's always that sense of I don't know whether this is going to happen or not.
Yeah, man, I think it's everywhere. But I think the difference in America is that you have the joys of different states.
Yes.
And kind of states have different laws and they're like willing to do different things. And although I think for a lot of countries it's hard to comprehend, however, America is so big that California is practically a country. Florida is practically a country. Texas is practically a country. I think you can fit like 12 Englands in Texas. And you're like, well, makes sense. Like, I get it. So I think when it's a bit different in like European countries that are a bit smaller than America, especially us, like we're tiny. We've got a high population, but we're tiny.
Right.
And you can, when in such a small space, you can kind of not control, but you can kind of guide and lead that amount of people a little bit easier.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Like if I drive 5 hours north, I'm pretty much at the, I'm in the Scotland. Tip. Yeah. Right. And if I drive 5 hours down south, I'm literally at the bottom. So it's, whereas in America, if you drive 5 hours, it just gets you fucking nowhere.
Well, yeah, when I drive 5 hours from here, I'm still in fucking California.
Exactly.
In either direction.
Where in Cali are you? You in San Fran?
Oakland, which is, you know, cool. Right across from San Fran.
I was literally just watching a documentary on this pastrami house in Oakland. It looked amazing. I can't remember what it's called, but it looks great.
Wait, pastrami house in Oakland? How do I not know about this?
Yeah, it's like a hidden gem, supposedly. It was literally the hidden gem. It was called like the hidden gem in Oakland. And it looked fucking great, if I'm honest.
Well, next time you're in San Francisco, we need to hit that place up.
Let's go. It's called Justin and Ardy, and let's go.
Yes, we're going.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go back into time with you for a second and talk about your like musical upbringing. Mm. And I know you started DJing. You've been DJing for like most of your life at this point. But how did that start? And how did your parents have like a hand in getting you started with your music career?
Yeah, so it started a long time ago. I guess my dad took me to see Faithless. God knows when. I actually don't remember when they took me, but before I went to see Faithless, I wanted to like DJ, and I didn't even know what DJing was really. but we had like a family friend called Tomo. I actually saw him the other day. Who like did like, there's a local caravan park near me, and in the summer it's this like crazy kind of just loads of holiday makers, and every like Friday and Saturday they'd have like a disco in the like local place, and they'd like play bingo. It was just like proper family holiday thing.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. It's not really my cup of tea. It wouldn't be my cup of tea to go to now, but at the time it was great, and I was literally 9 years old when I started helping him out down there, and I'd just go and just help him out. And then there'd be times when he couldn't make it, so I'd just do it when I got a little bit older. And then around the age of, I'd always been into like dance music then. And then around the age of like 10, 11, my dad took me to see Faithless in Wales, which is like, it's obviously another country, but it's 30 minutes away from where we live.
Right.
Well, maybe at 45. And kind of then I was just like, okay, I have to do something like this. And then I was in like a music shop in Bristol, and there was like a poster called the DJ Academy. And my mum was like, well, you should do this. Like, it's like a 10-week course on like learn how to be a DJ. I didn't know what being a DJ was, really. I thought being a DJ was just playing records. I didn't know about mixing or anything like that. So every Monday night from when I was 12 and 13, every Monday night I would go to, for 10 weeks, I'd go to Bristol and to kind of do this DJ Academy. And there was loads of us. There was like a lot, it was all like adults doing it. I was definitely the youngest one by like my whole age. Like most people were like 25, 30. And from that, in that there was like, I can't remember how many people, let's say like 30 people. And there was like people that could mix, so they'd be in the like the upper level class. People that could like DJ but needed their like skills kind of like getting better and being taught a little bit more. And then there was people that couldn't never turned on a pair of decks, and I just was like, fuck it, I've never really, I don't have a clue what we're doing. So I went right in at the bottom, and yeah, from then, out of the whole point of that DJ Academy, it wasn't just about DJing, it was about how to promote yourself and everything. And this was in the days where it was vinyl only, and
right,
you'd like record CDs to kind of give to like promoters, and you'd make your own artwork and make your own flyers and do all of that. So they kind of taught you everything like that. And then part of the course was that you'd DJ at the end of it, and you'd all put a night on in the club that you that you learn how to DJ.
Oh wow.
And there was like a crew of us that would just like did that. And then, yeah, so we put the night on, and I actually got kicked out of the club because I was too young. Although like we organized it, so it was fine. But the security guard was just being a wanker. And I eventually got back in. But it was cool. Like my whole family came. I think my teacher from school came as well. And like she brought her friends. So like, Mum and Dad have just like always been super supportive. Like all my family have been super supportive the whole way. And from that night, I just kind of carried on playing. And yeah, it kind of all, I've had an amazing life in music. And if I look back, I've had some amazing times and some really shit times as well. But
of course.
But I have had this, like, I've lived an amazing life in music, and it's still a very long way from where I want it to be. But it's, yeah. And I think with my parents, like, my mum's a great singer. My dad is not a great singer, but my dad, like, loves music as well. So we were just always brought up around music, which is kind of standard, right? Everyone usually is when they're young, but
right,
it's they're just extremely supportive. They never told me that I had to get a real job, or they never told me that I needed to like go to university. They were like, do what the hell you want and we'll support you. And I think like my parents, they're super successful in what they do, but growing up, like, we were poor growing up,
right.
And but my whole life I've seen them work their ass off until they've got to a point where they're extremely successful now and have a lovely life. And I think watching them work and achieve what they wanted to achieve in life, it kind of, I learned that from them, and I learned that you actually just have to work really fucking hard to get anywhere in life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think like they've been a huge part of my life, and they still are, if you know what I mean. But yeah, that is, I was super lucky to have them and still have them. They're kind of a big part of my career and just my life outside of music as well. They kind of, yeah, like all of my friends are like super close with them. We all, like, if I've got loads of friends coming over, my parents are there, and sometimes my brother and sister. So it's like, it's just a big family kind of atmosphere that they've always kind of created from such a young age.
That's really fascinating that your parents played such a large part, not just like you becoming a musician, but also sounds like your work ethic and how you create community around yourself too.
Yeah, I think it's important to have good people around you. We all make our own mistakes and kind of have shitty people around and learn from it. And it would be wrong for me to say that I haven't had a lot of shitty people around me at some point in my life. We all have. But it's how you deal with those shitty people is what makes you who you are, I think. And how you deal with those shit situations, and whether you learn from it or whether you kind of allow yourself to grow from it. It's also understanding the process of life. And it's taken me a long time to get there, and I still am learning that. But it's having really strong foundations in morals and what I want to perceive myself as and how I want to hold myself in, not even in my career, in my life, because I could happily, I know that it, if I took myself out of music, I'd still be the person who I am today, if you know what I mean.
Right. Right.
And yeah, I'm not trying to fit in anywhere. And I think that's kind of the thing that's helped me. I have gone through parts of my career where I've been trying to fit in, but that's when I learned I was my least happiest.
Right.
But yeah, man, I've got a great life. I'm fucking lucky.
Well, let's, you mentioned not trying to fit in anywhere right now. Mm. And, well, let's kind of talk about that and like in relation to your record label.
Yeah.
And it seems like you're comfortable right now. Mm. with where you're at and like where you're going. And I feel like, your record label kind of represents who you are, and you're trying to like create a more impactful message, not just with the music you're releasing, but also with like the visual aspect of everything that you're doing. Like the videos you guys have released with all of your, all of the music have been nothing short of incredible.
Mm.
So what's the message you're trying to relay there, and how did that all come about?
So I love film. Film is like one of my favorite things. And I think you can give a message away in music. Like let's say for instance, like an Adele record. Okay.
Yep.
Most people have listened to an Adele record and it gives them some sort of feeling that's like, I don't know, I can't speak for everyone, but there's Adele records that I can remember the first time I heard it. I can remember the people that I was around. I can remember like everything to do with that record.
Right.
And it's the same with any music, right? But I think the thing with dance music is that a lot of the time it's just for the club.
Right.
And the meanings behind the dance records are literally just for the club, and that's absolutely fine. And I think clubs have like a real important place in our lives. But I think there's actually more to the music than just clubs. And well, at least when I try and write a record, sometimes I am, but not all the time. I'm not always trying to just write a record for the clubs. I'm writing records, trying to write records with a bit of a bigger meaning. And I think because I'm not writing songs that like have full on lyrics, and it's not like a generic pop song structure and things like that. I'm trying to write songs that have a bit of a meaning. But it's kind of sometimes hard to get that across to people and what I'm trying to kind of get at. And with the video, I've been working with Matt, who's an amazing director. He actually lives in Oakland. And I think he's actually in LA now, but I think he's from Oakland. And I just wanted to find somebody that's like creative that I can be like, this is what I want to, this is the message I want to get across.
Right.
And how do we do this visually? So like with You Take Me Higher, the music video was about a girl that was a drug addict. Like in my family, they run drug and alcohol rehabs, and I've always been around like addiction in my life through going to the rehabs and working at the rehabs for my parents and kind of things like that.
Right.
So I wanted to give like a little bit of a message about that. And the You Take Me Higher can be taken two different things, if you know what I mean. The You Take Me Higher could be like about the euphoria, or it could be that escapism by taking drugs.
Right.
But I didn't want to just be like, oh, it's just a rave and a dude or a chick is just taking some pills and it's just a generic dance record video. Cause that's what everything is about. If you know what I mean, like I'm not there to promote getting high and shit like that. I'm there to like actually give a bit of a message out.
Right. Absolutely.
And then the video for Hallelujah, sadly, we had to take it down, which I understand why. But that was just kind of more of a fun video that it was based in a church, and it was like, I'm not a religious person,
right?
And I wanted to, like, I've seen some, like, on touring, I've seen some weird stuff with religion.
I bet.
And I don't, like, really weird stuff. And I wanted to kind of get this feeling across of, like, it can be this really cool thing and, like, bring everyone together, but it can also be really fucking weird.
Right.
And when the record dropped, it all went a bit weird and kind of things, weird shit happened. And it, I don't know if people would have really have got the message, but that's what I was trying to get across. With my church, the collab between myself and MK, he's from Detroit. I live in Detroit when I'm in America. And we just wanted to, my church thing, I class this sounds really cliche, but I class like a club as a church, as a community. I'm not a religious person, but I'm like a true believer of, like, I like what religion does to a certain extent, and it just brings people together. And I think that's what clubs do in the best possible way. Like, you can have God knows what views and no one gets judged in a club.
Right. So true.
And I think that's what's really important to me. And so with my church, we were like, okay, we want to the record's quite a Detroit-y vibe anyway. He's from Detroit. I live in Detroit. We kind of have this root in Detroit. So let's actually show people Detroit and make it a bit abstracty and kind of a bit weird. And that was the vibe for that. And it was actually really important for MK to have Detroit links with that, which I was down with. And then the most recent video was Run Run, and I just wanted to make people cry. I had a storyline in my head that, like, I wanted people to watch it and really just, like, be... No, sorry. Run, Run. Wrong one. Run with the last Place I Belong was about wanting to make people cry. So the record I wrote with Ollie Norton, who's the vocalist on there.
Yeah.
And he's a mate from mine locally. And we wrote it back in 2018. And I'd just come off a tour, and it was like my first time back in the UK for a long time. And I was like, I really want to write something about being somewhere I like truly belong. And 2018 was like a strange year for me, because I'd actually just fired my managers at that time. And I was just going through a lot of transitional phase in my career and kind of working out what I wanted to do.
Right.
And we wrote this record, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then, like, I know Ollie had had some friends that had passed away and things like that, like, after the record had written. And I was like, when it got to the video, I was like, this video needs to be powerful. It needs to be a very powerful video and really give a message of, like, yeah, just trying to evoke emotion in people. And the video is pretty much about, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's about four friends. One of the friends is like super sick, and they're going on their last road trip together, and the friend that's super sick passes away. And it was just about a togetherness again. It's just about four friends just all having the last trip of their lifetime and just living in the moment and just enjoying their last moment together, all knowing that it's going to be their last moment together,
right?
But just making the most of it, which I think a lot of us have been in that situation without knowing it.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I kind of went on a tangent, but I don't just want to put out dance generic dance music videos. I don't see the point. I kind of want to create a conceptual for each video, and just like just give a little bit more of a message. And the thing is, I'm not doing it for people. Like, I don't release it so people get the message. I want people to make their own message up from whatever they're watching, and it might mean something completely different to them to what the actual record means to me. But if I'm kind of pulling on the emotion cords of someone, then I've done the right job. That's what I kind of set out to do.
I love that. Beautifully stated. And it's okay that you went off in a tangent, because all of that was great. You mentioned that your parents run a drug and alcohol abuse center.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to understand, does that have anything to do with why you decided not to engage in drinking or drugs, and you stay healthy and you work out? Because I know that's like a pretty big part of your life.
Maybe subconsciously. But not like, I used to drink up until when I was like 21, and then was just like, I just don't enjoy it. I don't like the taste of it. I don't like the effect it has on me. I like to wake up the next day and be productive. And when I drink, it just would never be that. So I think, yeah, subconsciously I'm like, fuck ever being in a situation where I have to go to rehab. But also, rehab isn't it is about stopping drugs and alcohol, but it's actually more so therapy about dealing with the issues that you're masking with the drugs and alcohol or whatever addiction you have. And yeah, so subconsciously, yes, probably. But I wouldn't say it's like the only reason.
For sure. All right. So I'm going to switch gears, and I want to talk about your personal love for Candy Stanton and the fact that, I mean, you got the love tattooed on you somewhere,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and you got the chance to release a track with her vocal. Mm. And not only just release the track, cause anybody could have released an edit, cause everybody's done edits of all of her vocals.
Yeah.
But you got to do something where you actually worked with her team and got a chance to legally release that.
Yeah.
Given your love for her vocals, what was it like to do something like that?
It's super special. It's super special. It was a lot of work, like behind the scenes. And even when the record came out, it was a lot of work to actually like get it done correctly. We had a lot of people fighting against us for that record for it to actually even come out. But I managed to like reach out to Candy and was talking to her daughter on many occasions, via email. And yeah, it's just kind of mad, right? It's like,
yeah,
Candy Stanton is an icon to me, but in like, for generations, right? Like, she's never going to be forgotten, that woman. Like, no matter what, that she's never going to be forgotten in any of the music. So it was just amazing, and it was nice to have their blessings. And like, her daughter was like, Candy's listened to the record and she loves it and like is super happy with it. And yeah, do what you want with it, really. But yeah, it's, I don't know, it's kind of surreal. I'd love to meet her. I'd really love to meet her. And I've put it on my list to do. But yeah, she's a legend.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of crazy that you've achieved all of these things, and you say that you're not totally where you want to be, but you've achieved some really great things in your career. But at one point you actually quit music for a while and thought about just opening a club.
How did you hear about this?
I'll tell you, like 100%, I read almost every interview that I can find on the people that I talk to. And then I troll their social media.
Wow.
So I'm looking back, cause I want to I wanted to get the story, and you can't get the story unless you ask the crazy questions,
this is,
right?
This is true journalism. When I do a podcast or anything, I literally do no research. I literally like turn on the mic and be like, so what are we talking about? So fair play to you. I respect that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So, I mean, what brought you, why did you decide that you wanted to quit, and what brought you back?
So it was when I signed Big Booty to Worthy's label, Anabatic. She released it as he's now a she. But she released it, and it did pretty well. It was like, it was doing all right. And it was kind of the first record that I had any real kind of support and success. And like Jamie Jones was playing. Jamie Jones broke the record, really. And Seth Troxler Eats Everything, MK were all playing it. And I was like, oh my God, Jamie Jones is playing my record. That means that I need to sign a record to Hot Creations. And he was asking for a record for me and an EP. And that's when I went down the rabbit hole of trying to sound like everybody else on Hot Creations. And was like, what am I doing? Like, I was just the most unhappy person because I was just comparing myself to everyone. And I wasn't that good at writing music then. I really wasn't. But like, what I was good at was just doing what felt good at the time. Right. And it probably usually came out like shit, but I just wasn't, ready to be, to like try and be a good, or be a good producer. I had a lot more time in me to like actually be good, and like really hone in my craft. So yeah, I was like, I'm tapping out and quitting. And during that time I was quitting, I was planning on opening a club in Bristol. I'm so glad I didn't.
Just imagine what like now having opened a club.
Oh, dude. Well, this was, when was this? This was like 2013, maybe.
Yeah.
So I don't think it would be even open now. I probably would have closed it down. Like, we would have done good, strong 8 years. Like, 8 years for a club is long enough.
That's actually really long for a club.
Yeah, exactly.
If you can go past that, then more power to you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so glad of it. But I needed something to like take my mind out of music. Although I know clubs still music based, but I needed a project to like take me out of the situation that I was in my headspace and be like, let's concentrate on something else. And then my manager at the time was like, yo, dude, you need to get back to writing music. We've just signed a record that's affected or something like that. And yeah, I was just back on it then.
It's interesting to hear about like these ups and downs in everybody's journeys. Because nobody ever thinks about that when they see you on stage.
No.
or when they listen to your records or any of that. Everybody's just like, oh, this guy was always good, or this guy's making hot tracks. So it's just fascinating to me to just like hear these things and like hear about these stories.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Because it's like, if we sat down and went through your life, if you know what I mean, and what you've had in your careers, not just careers, in your life, like what ups and downs, like you actually need the downs to have the ups. Like if your life was just constantly up, it would be fucking depressing. I think it'd be worse than if it was always down, because there's nowhere ever up.
No, I mean that's like a good DJ set too. I mean, you need the bottoms, you need the hills and valleys. Everybody needs, like, you need to bring it down sometimes so you can really appreciate the up part.
Totally.
Because otherwise it's, yeah, like you said, it not only depressing, but God, fucking boring.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And like when it's full on all the time, you're just like, just in life, if everything's like every day, oh my God, you've done this. Oh my God, you've done this. I don't think I can allow myself to be that excited all the time anyway. I'm not an excitable person. I don't really get excited for things.
I feel that.
I'm like more of a...
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Like, yeah, that'd be cool. And then it's amazing when it happens or when I'm in it, but I don't really look ahead and be like, oh, I can't wait to do that. Like when you asked like about going back to shows, it's going to be fucking great. But I'm not like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I can't wait to go back to shows. Just because until I'm there, anything could happen. And I think it's just about trying to enjoy right now and when it happens, enjoy it then.
That's a great way to live your life, though. Like, living in the now is, I feel like, something a lot of people forget to do.
I forget all the time. I forget every day. I forget every day. But I still try and remind myself every day as well.
Do you think that's why you've been able to stay so busy over the last year, while a lot of other people struggle to be inspired? Because I know there's been ups and downs for you over the last year, but I feel like I listen to your podcast like almost religiously. So that you've stayed really busy, and you've kept your work ethic. How did you find it so easy to write?
When I got home back to the UK, I hadn't written in this studio for 3 months. So I've got a studio. I'm lucky enough to have a studio in my house in Detroit, and in my place in the UK, I have like a studio. This was like the OG studio that I kind of have always written in. And I hadn't written here for ages. I'd just come off like an amazing tour, like my best tour I've ever had in America. And I was lucky to get that tour. I'd only had one show canceled because of COVID. So I actually completed the tour, which was like 23, 24 dates, I think. And I'd been playing open to close the whole tour, and it just like gave me a whole new lease of life in the studio when I'd been done. And I came back home and just wrote. And I'd actually had, I think November last year, I had all my releases for this year already planned. And Ryan, my manager, and I, we were just like, okay, so let's write off the touring year of 2021, because we know it's probably not going to happen. And if it does, great. But if it doesn't, then it is what it is. But what we need to do is release as much music as we can.
Right.
So 2020, we kind of held back on a couple of releases because we just didn't have a fucking clue. Right. And then going into 2021, we were like, we just need to release a track every single month. And on all we have is now on my label, we decided to do one every 8 weeks, and then in between it allows me to release on other labels if I want, or remixes or collabs or anything like that.
Right.
So the only month this year that I don't have a release is July, and then every other month, some months I've actually got two releases. And I guess going back to the like, how did I keep focused? I just kept going.
Yeah.
And like, you have shit days, but I treat it like a job, and I just come in the studio and write. And this year, I haven't written that much at all. I've actually been writing for other people in other people's studios and kind of working on different genres of music and doing that for other people. And actually taken a step back from Will Clark records because I've got this year planned out already. Right. I actually have records planned for next year already, which is wild. I wanted to hold back off the Will Clark stuff and be like, I need to find where I want to take things. I need to work out what I want to do for next year or for 2022 and see if I do shows this year, like what works and what doesn't work. Cause a lot of the records for the rest of the year now have never been played in a club.
That's crazy.
So I don't know if they're, but not, that's a lie. Like all the records that I'm releasing on All We Have Is Now, none of those have been played in a club. One record that's coming out on Factory 93 has been played in a club. Place I Belong that just been released had been played in a club for a while. But everything else hasn't. So I was just like, I don't want to just go in the studio just to write records because it doesn't, I can do that, but I don't need to right now.
Right.
And I'm not touring, so I'm not trying to write records for the clubs. So if I want to write a record, I want to write something that's like really makes me feel good about myself, not just a fucking techno record. Like we can all put a kick and a bass line together.
No doubt.
Exactly. So it's like I'm probably June and I'm like probably going to take the whole month to just like sit down and be like, okay, well, get back to writing for yourself and to get in it. And what I do is I just build a routine around it. And I wake up every morning, go to the gym, go into the studio and just write for 5 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours, come out, cook for the family, sleep, and just do that over and over again. And when I get into the schedule of just writing, I will then just write and just keep writing and I'll have a shit ton of records. But I haven't had this long off writing music for myself.
So, in years.
Mate, my whole life, my whole writing career, I've never had this long off. Like I probably haven't really written music for I've done edits and I've done like a few mixes and stuff like that, mix downs and gone to like done stuff with my mastering engineer and stuff like that. But I've not sat down and had this long off for my whole career. So it's a bit weird, but the studio hadn't been changed in like 9 years. So my dad built me this synth stand here that you can see,
which is amazing.
Yeah, it's unreal.
It's really cool.
It's unreal. He's good at DIY and stuff like that. His dad was like a carpenter and cabinet maker, so he kind of learned the tools. I've set the studio up like differently so I can kind of come in and like have a different workflow. I'm kind of setting June to be the month to get back on it.
That's awesome. That's really great.
Mm.
And over the last year, you've probably had some time to do some of the things like that are outside of music or maybe tangentially related to music.
Yeah.
Like your podcasts and cooking. So I kind of want to talk about both of those things. Cause I know, for example, like with your podcast, you were already interviewing people for the barbershop.
Yeah.
But what made you decide to flip that idea and just sit down and shoot the shit with people?
So November 2019, I was like, I have to stop the barbershop. I'd been doing it for 4 years. I think it was 4 years.
That's a long time.
And I was just like, I don't even like doing mixes. Like mixes just don't do it for me. When somebody asks me to do a mix, I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, do I have to? And like my manager's like, if he says yes to doing a mix, he like comes at me quivering and is like, Will, I'm sorry, but we've got to do a mix. Which is cool. Like I get it, but I was just with the barbershop. I was like, I can't fucking do this anymore. Like, I just can't. And yeah. I like having good conversations with people. And the podcast, I'd actually bought the equipment before COVID. But I hadn't kind of, I was trying to think of like a concept of how I wanted to do the podcast and what I wanted it to be based on and everything. And then I was like, fuck it. I just want to talk to anyone that I like. It doesn't have to be music. It's going to be more music. It's obviously more music based because that's the industry that I'm in.
But you've talked to other people.
Yeah, I've talked to other people and I love talking to other people. I love learning from other people. But it's still tough. Like, the podcast is still young. Like, the people that I want to get on, they're way too big. Like, they're way too big. And it's not even big guys in the industry. I'm not actually that fussed about getting big guys in the music industry. But I want to get, like, big chefs on. I want to get, like, amazing artists on. I want to get, like, rappers on, singers on. Like, I want to make it a really nice thing where people can learn. But selfishly, it's so I can learn, really. but I think we nowadays we miss the full reason that is nowadays we don't have long conversations, and it's like more conversations. You just don't have long conversations unless it's like with you and your mate. Very, very, very rarely we have a 2-hour conversation with no phones going off, no one looking at their phones, no one checking their emails, no one looking at Instagram, no one signing up to OnlyFans. Like, you just don't get it.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to create. I wanted to create a something where I can sit down with people that I come across that I respect and can really just have a conversation.
Yeah.
And as DJs, we tour around a lot, and I'm sure it's the same for you, like being part of the music industry. Like every conversation, or not every, but most conversations you have in the music industry and the business is like,
There's an end. There's a reason for it.
There's a reason to have a conversation, right? It's like, can you do this? Can you get this compilation sorted? Can you do this interview? Can you do that? And it's not like, how's it going, mate? What's going on?
Yeah.
And it's like, why not? We're all fucking normal people. We all shit at the same hole.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing. Why aren't we having these conversations? Like, I sat down with Oliver Heldens and Renia Zonefeld the other day, and it was a really good conversation. And it got pretty deep at the end with Oliver talking about his mental health and kind of his like bipolar disorder and everything like that. Like, I would never have like spoken to him about that in real life unless if that was just meeting at a club on tour. It just wouldn't have ever got there.
Right.
Maybe if we were in the studio, but if we were in the studio, it wouldn't have been a deep conversation and it wouldn't have just been us talking about that.
Right.
And I think it's really important. People need to talk more. We live in this world where we are very, like, even our music listening, how we watch things, like, we want everything now. And if it doesn't get our attention within the first 20 seconds, then we fucking turn off. And I think now, like, long conversations is actually what we need, because I think long conversation can be the way that we all grow as human beings.
Absolutely. You know, relating this to myself, but I think a lot of the reason why I love to interview artists or love to interview people, it's because I want to talk to people. Mm. And that's kind of why I format things the way that I do. I kind of try to make it breezy. And yeah, I'm asking questions, but also I'm just fascinated by the things people have to say.
Totally, man. Totally. It's important. It's really important to have people conversating. It's just something that I feel like we conversate with people differently because of text messages. And because of social media, and a lot of things can be taken the wrong way. Like, how many times have you text a girlfriend, a boyfriend, something, and they take it completely the wrong way? And it was not how you meant it. But if you actually said that as a conversation in person, it would have been like completely different.
you can't relate tone in 10 words.
No.
It doesn't work.
And I think with like Twitter, and I've pretty much come off Twitter. Not like deleted it, but I literally very rarely tweet purely because like I go on there and it's just people fucking shouting at each other. And I'm just like I could unfollow everyone and there would still be people shouting at each other. And I'm like, you guys, if you were in a room, you're a bunch of fucking pussies. You wouldn't say a word to each other. Like,
it's so true.
Like I genuinely had like somebody, I don't want to name names, but somebody on there was like literally talking so much shit to someone. And I knew both of them. And I was like, mate, just chill out. Like, be nice. And then this person tried to threaten me. He was like, next time I see you, I'm going to like smash your face in. I was like, all right.
No, you're not.
I was like, you're not. But I was like, if you want to try, you could try. But I'm like, okay, mate, just chill out. And then he came to my show and didn't even fucking like have the heart to say anything to me. And then I'm like, this is the issue, is that people are just so caught up in their own egos because they're trying to tell everyone how everyone else, trying to tell everyone that they should be having the same views and the same opinions as themselves. And we are going out of this thing where people aren't allowed their own opinions.
Yeah.
And people aren't, and you have to abide by what everyone else is saying. And if you have a different opinion on something, then you can be cancelled. And I'm just not for that. I'd rather sit down and have a long conversation and everyone be respectful for each other and kind of you get your point across and I get my point across and we all have a great time and have a laugh and take the piss out of each other and have proper conversation. I think it's so important.
Oh, no, absolutely. I actually, maybe like a year and a half ago, I went to go see a friend and his neighbor came over, seemed like a nice guy, but he happened to be a Trump supporter. And under different circumstances, I never would have spoken to this person, but we ended up sitting around a campfire and talking for like 3 or 4 hours. And it was amazing because, you know, there were lots of things that I agreed with this person on and lots of things that I didn't. But in the end, like, I still like the guy. Like,
I think
he was a great person. And I was like, you know, and I think that idea of like us actually getting back to talking to each other is just so important because we don't talk anymore.
Yeah, I think the whole political thing is very, very strange. And it doesn't make sense to me that, because I think what I can do it as well for myself. But I don't want to speak for everyone, but I kind of have to because this is how I feel. But I feel like most people tarnish, let's just use the Trump, for example, because it's just an easy thing. But everyone tarnishes all Trump supporters as bad people. And all Trump supporters tarnish the Biden supporters as bad people. Yeah. If we actually had a conversation, we all probably agree on most of the same things.
Yeah.
And we're allowed to support other people. We're allowed to do what we want. It's just a small minority that are louder than the majority.
Yep.
And the minority is all we see. We see the extremes of both sides because they're extreme, because they're the loudest ones. And realistically, it's the ones that acquire are the most powerful ones. And I think the sad thing is that it's very hard to talk about your views online if you're not in the like woke crew.
Right.
And yeah. Sometimes it's just easier to just, and it's wrong to say this, but sometimes it's just easier to shut the fuck up because I've got a lot more, we've got a lot more things to worry about than getting, I've got right fucking records. I've got to worry about my career. Like I've got to worry about my life. There's bigger things to worry about than trying to get my point across on online. People don't need my opinion. People really don't need my opinion. My opinion is for me. And by keeping my opinion to myself, I can just give what I can pick and choose what I want to give people. And I know that sounds a bit like, oh, he's like planning stuff. I want to add value to people's lives. And by sharing my opinion on social media, I'm not going to add value to your life. Like, I'm not going to give you something that you didn't think you needed that you do now. Like, right. What can I do? Like, I can make music. I can give you art. I can do things that make people feel good about themselves. And that's what's important to me, really. Not who do I support politically, or am I protesting, or what's my views on certain things. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. I get it a few times of like people like, especially it was really interesting around the election in America. Like, I had one friend like have a massive go at me, going like, you should be telling people to vote. And I'm like, I'm not fucking American. Like, I can't even vote myself. Right. So why would I tell everyone else to vote? Like, politically, like, I know where I stand, but I have fans that support everyone.
Right.
And I don't want anything in my career to alienate my fans, because I want them to be able to come to a show and completely escape all of that.
Right.
I'm not a political person. I'm not somebody that's trying to push my views onto people. I just want people to have fun and respect each other.
100%.
Yeah.
I feel that. I am going to ask, right, but I have one more question for you. This has been a lot of fun, by the way.
Yeah, it's been cool, man.
Yeah. So I have to ask your opinion on something. What excites you about the future of dance music?
It's really weird because I don't think there is a future right now. I think it's going to be, the future is to open clubs up in the near future. I'm really interested to see how music changes on the streaming platforms and when clubs are back open, because there's been a huge drop in streams with the clubs with the clubs closing down. There's been a 20% rise in normal streams, but dance music's just been dicked over.
No shit.
Yeah, it's awful. So I think that's going to make a big difference. And I'm really interested to see what... I really want to see these platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, YouTube Music, all these streaming platforms to like really... I really want to see what they're going to be doing for dance music, because I don't think it's been nailed yet. I don't think they've done the genres justice.
No, that's true.
So I'd really actually like to work with some of them, and like, or one of them, or whoever, and be like, okay, this is how you support the culture. Like, you have to build the culture in your platform to create something. This isn't about playing the biggest hits. This is about creating a proper like subculture within your platform, which could be interesting. I'm really interested in artists creating income outside of what streaming and doing shows.
Yeah.
I think COVID has kind of been a huge part of that, of showing a lot of artists that you have to make an income. You don't have to, but it's pretty wise to make an income outside of your generic touring.
Yeah.
And relying on streaming, unless you're like a massive artist, to rely on your streaming income is pretty not business.
Yeah.
Not busy.
Yeah,
yeah. Busy business savvy. No. So it's what, like, there's subscription places, like subscription websites and like Patreon, even like OnlyFans. I know OnlyFans has like a bad rep for it, but
yeah, but that's there. It's for everybody.
Yeah.
Really.
I'm working with a few people on a few things as well. I'm all about, I think what the issue is at the moment, you have companies that create amazing things or amazing concepts, but then don't do it that well, or then charge super high rates.
Yeah.
And you're just like, guys, you're seeing the problem and you're actually not making the problem better. You're actually giving somebody a solution, but charging them extremely high amounts for something that really shouldn't be that much money.
Right.
And then you're like, it's like being in the major record label game. It's like, it's not that incentivized to actually allow an artist or a creative person, not just music, anything, like to make content. So I'm working on a few things outside of music, but it's like, I want to be able to give creative people platforms that they can earn money and they can contact their followers, fans, whatever you want to call them, and build a proper community without all the bullshit of ads and algorithms and shit like that. And present it in a really nice way so it looks good. So I think that could be the future. There could be parts of that where you're going to find, it's classic in like the comedy world at this moment in time. Like, right. there's comedians that, almost like the podcast world, there's comedians and people that make insane money from through podcasts, YouTube, things like that.
Yeah.
But I think there's even a more like insular thing to bring it closer and like have, let's say for instance, you had 100 fans and they'd all pay you £20 a month, $20 a month. And you're giving something extra, if you know what I mean. But in that community, you're really growing a real community. And I think that's right. What at heart I'd love to be able to help people create is a real connection from the artist and to the followers. Because you don't get that on social media. Like, you post something and 2-4% of your followers see it.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's the point?
What's the point?
What's the fucking point?
Exactly.
I'd rather have, like, my food Instagram sometimes does better than my, like, percentage rate does better than my music Instagram, purely because there's less followers on my food Instagram.
So more of them are
seeing it. So more of them are seeing it.
Bizarre.
And it's like, this doesn't make sense to me. Like, if I understand what they're trying to do with Instagram, they're trying to make ads, they're trying to make money. But
right.
My thing would be, the more people that see someone's shit,
the more chances they have to get the thing done that they're trying to do.
Exactly. And also it means that more people are going to be on the platform. And then that means that you have more space for ads.
Yeah.
It's just like, absolutely. It's a fucking no-brainer. But that's the thing, is I want to be able to create something where the fans can go, the artists can go, yo, here we go. This is what, and everyone sees it.
Yeah.
And everyone, so that's kind of what I think the future is actually building community, smaller communities.
Yeah.
That are more like actual fans, that doesn't rely on algorithms to kind of keep people keep people away.
I love it.
And also allow artists to earn a reasonable wage and earn a nice living from doing their job. Because record labels aren't the way forward, I don't think, anymore.
No, I don't think so either. I think and everybody deserves to eat.
Totally. And the record label, I know I have a record label, but the reason why I haven't signed people is because I don't feel like I can give them what I want to give them yet as a record label owner. I can't take them on tour. I can't guarantee that their records are going to do really well. And I think most record labels can't do that anymore. And all they're doing is just signing catalog to then make the record label worth more in the long term to then sell on. Again, it's business. I get it.
Yeah.
But they're not coming at it from the artist point of view. They're coming at it as the business side of you, where I kind of want to be able to go, here's the business. I have to make money, but also I want you to make as much money as me, if not more, because you deserve more, because you're the artist. I'm just helping you get there. But yeah, it's a process, and I know that was a long-winded answer for the future of how dance music. I'd like to see promoters booking interesting acts that aren't just the same acts on festivals and building real cultures.
Yeah.
And that kind of pisses on my fire because I get booked a lot to play in America, especially, but there's certain scenes that I agree, even in America, some of the festivals are very same. And you're just like, come on, guys. Oh God. Like,
there's no ingenuity happening.
No. But I think it's in the UK, it's even worse. And promoters this is really kind of controversial and it's going to piss people off, but like my agents in the US, they're fucking great and they work their ass off and they literally are there to work and they're there to build you as an artist.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of agents in other parts of the world that aren't there. They just want somebody that has a hit record and they're not willing to build an artist. And there's promoters that won't book artists that haven't had hit records or that don't have a bit of buzz, but they're not listening to the music. They're not looking at building the culture and building what it's about, if you know what I mean. And
yeah,
it's all just like money, 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 which is great. We all need to earn money. We all need to make money, but there's no longevity in it. There's no longevity in, I get festivals because it costs so much to put them on and they have a 400 cap venue. Like you can, if you built a culture around your venue and your night, you don't have to have a headliner. You don't have to pay for 10, 15, 20 grand for a headliner. If you build a great culture around your club and your night and your promoters, you could sell that out every fucking night.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something Elro's done really well. I mean, because even if you took away their massive lineups, people would still go.
But
because they were already.
Exactly. But why, what are they doing differently? They're being something different. They're not just opening a club door. And,
no, it's experience.
Yeah, exactly.
There's an experience.
And I've said this so many times on my podcast about We Love Sundays in Space in Ibiza, that it used to be like the party on Sundays. And they're the best promoters ever, because they would have headliners, but they would have new, fresh, hot acts coming through and they would grow them until they were headliners. And America's actually pretty good at it. America does do that. But I still think there's room for improvement.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Well, that's all I have for you. Thank you, man. thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to me today. That was
anytime, man. Thank you. Yeah,
that was great fun. And now that you bring up conversations, I may be calling you.
Yeah.
Just to shoot
call,
the shit, man.
Call me whenever, man. Call me whenever. I'm always here.
I appreciate that. But again, thank you so much. It was great talking to you today, and I'll be in touch.
See you. When will I see you?
When are you going to be in? Where are you going to be in the U.S.?
I'm playing San Francisco. We've just booked a day in August.
Are you playing at the Midway?
No, we're playing. We're playing a party outside.
Yeah, an outdoor party.
Yeah,
Midway's doing outdoor parties now. It's all outdoors.
Yeah, it's not at the Midway. It's something different.
All right. Well, you let me know what that is, and I'll be there.
Yeah,
and we can make sure to hit that pastrami place too, mate, while you're here.
It looked great. We need to go there.
I'm all about it, bro.
Cool, man. Keep safe.
You too.
Look after yourself. Let me know if you need anything. Take care, mate.
All right. Bye. Thank you so much.
Bye, dude.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination, YahooFinance.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.